Ever feel like you're just drowning in to-dos?
Mm.
You know, like your leadership role, it's less about steering the ship and more about bailing water constantly.
Yeah, I think a lot of us we can relate to that feeling.
Yeah, definitely. But what if I told you that the secret to actually staying afloat, and not just staying afloat, but like making progress,
Okay, I'm intrigued.
it comes from, get this, 19th century economics.
Now that's a twist. Economics and leadership? I don't see the connection.
Right. Not exactly intuitive, but the article we're diving into today, it's by A.G. Lafley,
Okay, former CEO of P&G,
the
right?
one and only, and Roger Martin. He used to head up the Rotman School of Management.
Oh, wow. So these guys are like the heavy hitters.
Total heavy hitters, known for turning around, you know, struggling organizations. And their argument, it's that overwhelmed leaders, they need to start thinking like savvy traders.
Okay, I'm listening.
Specifically, using the principle of comparative advantage.
Ah, Ricardo's theory, the classic example, right? Portugal and England trading wine and wool.
You got it. Each country focuses on what they produce most efficiently.
Right. But I'm curious, how do you take like a concept about international trade
Yeah.
and apply it to, let's say, a CEO who's facing a mountain of decisions every day?
Oh, that is exactly what Lafley and Martin unpack in their article. It's called Leading to Win.
Okay.
They even lay out like a four-step process for actually putting this into practice. And the first step, it's all about understanding your limited resource.
And in this case, it's not like land or labor,
Yep.
it's time.
It's time. A leader's time, it's finite. It needs to be invested strategically, like how a country chooses, right, which goods to specialize in.
It's like shifting your mindset from
Yes.
tackling everything that seems important to focusing on where your skills specifically make the biggest difference.
Exactly. Instead of being a jack of all trades, you become like the ace.
In your own particular hole, so to speak.
Exactly. And they call this first step eliminating the should-dos.
Should-dos.
Yeah. It's the tasks leaders feel obligated to do, often because of tradition or pressure from others, even if they aren't the best use of their time.
Oh, it's so easy to fall into that trap. As you move up, suddenly you're expected to be involved in everything, even
Even.
if you're not the best person for the job.
Oh, absolutely. And Roger Martin, he actually gives a great example of this
Oh, yeah.
from his own experience. As dean of Rotman, everyone told him that faculty hiring, that was the dean's most important job.
I can see why people would say that.
But Martin, he knew he needed to focus his energy on, you know, bigger picture stuff, strategic initiatives.
Right.
So he made a decision, kind of controversial, actually.
What did he do?
He delegated faculty hiring to his associate dean, who honestly was probably better suited for it anyway.
Now that's a bold move. I bet some people pushed back,
Right.
like going against the norm.
Oh, it definitely wasn't easy.
Yeah.
But Martin, he was able to show how this would like benefit everyone.
Okay, smart.
He argued that freeing up his time would let him focus on initiatives that raise the school's profile,
Let me see.
which would then attract even better faculty in the long run.
So he connected the dots between a seemingly small decision and the larger vision.
Yes, exactly. And it worked. This freed up a significant amount of time for him, like 50 days a year.
Wait, 50 days? That's like 2 months.
I know, right? Imagine what you could do with 2 extra months on your calendar.
That's incredible. And this brings up a crucial question for our listener. What are you currently doing out of obligation that someone else could handle? Maybe even better than you.
It's time to start identifying those should-dos
Yeah.
and think about who you could empower to take them on.
Absolutely. Now, the second step, Lafley and Martin outline, it builds on this idea of delegation, but it takes it a step further. It's about delegating tasks where your advantage is slight.
Even if you're good at them.
Even if you're good at them, they argue that sometimes. Even tasks we enjoy, that we excel at, they're better handled by others if it lets us focus on our true strengths. That can be a tough pill to swallow, especially for like high achievers, the type who likes to be involved in everything.
I know.
Why give up something you're good at?
That's where understanding comparative advantage it really comes in. It's not just about doing what you're good at, it's about maximizing your impact.
By focusing on areas where you have the greatest edge.
Yes. Lafley himself, he provides a great example of this. He was known for his branding expertise, but he chose to delegate brand reviews to his team.
Hold on, wasn't he like considered a branding guru?
He was.
Why would he hand off something so central to his like area of expertise?
He realized his time was better spent on CEO level activities, things only HE could do,
yeah.
like setting the overall vision for P&G.
Okay, so bigger picture stuff.
Exactly. Plus, delegating those reviews, it let him develop his team, give them more ownership.
So he was thinking long term about the health of the whole organization.
Exactly. Not just his own ego.
That must have been a hard decision, though. How did he make sure his team was ready to, like, take on that responsibility and maintain his standards, you know?
Well, he didn't just dump the task on them and disappear. He made sure they had the resources, the training, the support they needed. Mm. And he stayed involved at a high level, giving guidance, but empowering them to make the day-to-day decisions.
That's key. Delegation isn't about abdicating responsibility. It's thoughtful empowerment.
Yes.
Now, this raises an interesting question for our listener. What tasks are you holding on to that you could delegate? With some careful training and support, of course.
It might feel counterintuitive at first, but letting go of those tasks, even if you enjoy them, it can free you up to focus on where you truly shine.
Exactly. And that leads us perfectly into step three, but
yeah,
we'll have to save that for next time.
Okay, so we've cleared our calendars, right? Got rid of those pesky should-dos and those tasks where, you know, our advantage is slight. It's like we decluttered our leadership closets, got rid of the stuff we don't really need to be wearing anymore.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. It feels good to lighten the load a bit.
Totally. But now, now comes the fun part.
Oh, good.
Step three. It's about investing time where you make the biggest difference, where your comparative advantage, it really shines.
This is where it gets strategic. Moving beyond like just being efficient to being truly effective.
You got it. And Roger Martin's experience as Dean of Rotman, perfect example of this. Instead of relying on traditional fundraising methods, which, frankly, weren't really his forte.
Yeah, fundraising, not everyone's cup of tea.
He decided to play to his strengths.
Okay, so what were his strengths? Was he like a master networker, some kind of fundraising ninja?
Well, he was a master networker, in a way, but not in the traditional sense.
Intriguing. Tell me more.
He was a brilliant academic and a gifted writer. So instead of all those cocktail parties courting donors, he focused on writing books, articles, bringing management research to, like, a wider audience.
So he built his own comparative advantage in a way.
Exactly. He turned thought leadership into a fundraising strategy.
I see, I see. By building Rotman's reputation as a hub for, like, cutting-edge ideas.
Exactly.
He attracted donors who were impressed by their intellectual capital, the value of their expertise and research.
Exactly. Now, I'm curious, what did that shift look like in practice? Did he have to convince the development team to, you know, embrace this new approach?
Yeah. And how did he measure success with this new strategy?
It definitely required a mindset shift for everyone. But Martin, he was able to show that this approach, it wasn't just more aligned with his strengths. It had the potential to reach way more donors.
The type of donors who are looking for something more, right?
Exactly. More than just a name on a building.
So he was challenging the conventional thinking about fundraising, showing it can be about more than just asking for money.
Yes.
It's about building a brand, showcasing intellectual value.
And it worked. Rotman's profile, it just soared.
Yeah.
Attracting top students and donors. Now, this step might seem, you know, daunting to some people.
Yeah, for sure.
But the key takeaway is to identify those areas where you have the potential for significant impact. It's about asking yourself, how can I leverage my unique skills and knowledge to make a real difference?
And it's not just about finding your niche, it's thinking creatively. How can I apply my strengths to things that seem unrelated? Finding those unexpected connections.
Like Martin did with thought leadership and fundraising.
Exactly. It's about being willing to challenge the status quo and find new ways to create value.
Now, the fourth step, and this one's really crucial.
Yeah.
It's about those tasks that fall squarely in the only I can do this zone.
Oh, okay. The non-delegables.
The things that, for better or worse, are uniquely tied to your role as a leader.
This is getting to the heart of leadership, I think. Recognizing what can't be passed on no matter how skilled your team is.
And A.G. Laffley, he offers a really compelling example of it.
Okay, let's hear it.
He was incredibly passionate about leadership development. Believed it was vital to P&G's long-term success. So even though he was running this massive global company, right, he carved out eight full days to co-teach a leadership course.
For P&G's top executives.
Yep, with Roger Martin, actually.
8 days, that's a serious time commitment for a CEO. I mean, I can only imagine the pressure he was under to, you know, focus on running the company.
Right.
What made him make that kind of investment?
For Laffley, it wasn't just checking a box. It was about, like, passing the torch.
Yeah.
Making sure the next generation of leaders at P&G, they were equipped to, like, carry on the legacy of innovation and growth. And for him, that meant being personally involved.
That says a lot about his philosophy, not just focused on short-term gains. He was playing the long game, investing in the future, even as he prepared to, you know, step down eventually. That's powerful.
And it wasn't just formal training programs. Laffley, he also made a point of meeting one-on-one with the heads of every single business unit, every region, yeah, every function, every quarter.
Wow. Every quarter. That's a lot of meetings.
He saw those individual meetings as a chance to, like, mentor his team, understand their challenges, help them grow.
Those must have been so valuable for the people getting that feedback and for Laffley, too, right? Staying connected to what's actually going on.
It was like he was building this network of leadership within P&G, this culture of mentorship.
But I'm curious, how did he find the time for all of that? Was there pushback? People seeing these meetings as, I don't know, a distraction?
Well, like with anything, it's about prioritizing, recognizing the long-term value. Laffley, he was adamant these meetings were non-negotiable, a cornerstone of his approach.
And, I mean, the results speak for themselves. P&G, they consistently ranked high for leadership development, and their track record of successful CEOs, it's a testament to how effective his approach was.
Absolutely. Now, this raises a really important question for our listener.
Yeah.
What are the non-negotiable tasks in your role that only you can handle? What are the things that, if you don't do them, they just won't get done to the same standard or with the same impact?
It's about figuring out what's truly unique to your role, where your specific experience is irreplaceable.
Sometimes the most impactful thing you can do as a leader is just be present,
yeah,
offer guidance, support, invest in the people around you.
Absolutely. Now, before we wrap up and get to the key takeaways,
yeah,
I think it's worth saying, you know, identifying these only I can do this tasks, it can be challenging.
It is.
It takes a deep understanding of your own strengths, but also weaknesses, and being able to delegate well to empower your team.
It's true. It's an ongoing process.
Yeah.
Of self-reflection, experimentation, adaptation. Not always easy.
But the rewards for you and your organization,
they can be transformative.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've made it. We journeyed through all four steps of Laffley and Martin's leading to win. From ditching those pesky should-dos to really uncovering those tasks that truly only WE can do. And we've heard some pretty inspiring stories along the way, right?
It really is amazing to see how, like, worlds that seem totally different, like 19th century economics and, you know, modern leadership, they can actually intersect and offer some really powerful insights.
It's true. And now I think the big question is, you know, what does this all mean for our listener? The leader out there navigating the complexities of their own role, what are the key takeaways they can walk away with?
I think one of the biggest ones has got to be recognizing that your time, it's your most valuable resource. Like, a country can't produce everything, right? And a leader can't be involved in every decision, every meeting, every single task.
It's about making choices, strategic choices about where you're going to put your energy.
Especially these days, you're constantly bombarded with information demands. It's so easy to just get swept up and lose sight of what truly matters.
Which is why those first two steps are so important. Eliminating the should-dos and delegating where your advantage is, you know, slight. It's about freeing up your time and your mental bandwidth to really focus on the areas where you can make the biggest difference.
I totally agree, but letting go, it's hard.
Oh, it's so hard. We've all been there, right? Mm-hmm. That feeling of, if I want it done right, I got to do it myself.
Oh, I know.
But as we've seen, delegation. It's not just about offloading the work. It's about empowering your team, creating chances for them to grow.
Sometimes the best leadership you can do is stepping back and letting others shine.
100%.
Mm-hmm.
And that brings us to, I think, our next takeaway. The power of focusing on your strengths, understanding what your unique skill set is, and finding ways to apply those skills to create real value.
And it's not about being good at everything, right? It's about being exceptional at the things that really matter.
You don't have to be a jack of all trades. In fact, focusing on your strengths, that's how you get to a level of expertise where you really stand out.
Exactly.
And look, it might even require you to rethink how things are usually done.
Yeah.
Like Roger Martin did with, you know, fundraising. He didn't just try to do the same old thing better. He found a totally new approach, and it worked.
Yeah. It's a great example of how creative thinking and a willingness to challenge the status quo, those can lead to breakthroughs.
It's looking beyond what's obvious, finding those unexpected connections. where your specific skills can make a difference.
Now, I know this all sounds great in theory, right?
It does.
But putting this into practice, it's tough. There's always going to be those competing demands, urgent requests, unexpected fires to put out. So how do you stay focused on those high-impact activities, the stuff that really moves the needle?
That is the question, isn't it?
And that's where I think our third takeaway comes in. The power of saying no might seem counterintuitive, but learning to say no to things that don't align with your priorities, that's essential for protecting your time, your energy.
It's so easy to get caught up. Feel like you're obligated to say yes to everything. Every request, every meeting, every opportunity.
But every time you say yes to something, you're saying no to something else.
That.
And that something else might be something in your only I can do this zone. Yeah. Something that could have a way bigger impact. So it's being strategic with your commitment.
Because time is limited. You have to choose where you're going to invest it.
I love that saying, you know, if you chase two rabbits, you'll catch neither.
So true.
And this leads us to, I think, the final takeaway here, which might seem obvious, but leadership. It's a journey, not a destination.
It's constantly evolving.
It is. Continuous learning, growth, adaptation, being open to new ideas, willing to try things, and never being afraid to, you know, ask for help.
Yeah.
There will always be new challenges, new opportunities popping up. So embrace the journey, be curious, be flexible, and be willing to evolve.
And remember, the examples we talk about today, they're not supposed to be like a rule book. They're here to inspire you to think differently about your own UN leadership. Find those areas where you can make a real difference and have the courage to go after them.
Absolutely. So to wrap up our deep dive into leading to win, we want to leave you with a final thought, something to kind of ponder.
As you continue on your own leadership journey.
Think about this. Beyond your current role, your responsibilities right now, what skills, what passions could you develop to create an even stronger comparative advantage down the line? What are those areas of potential that you haven't tapped into yet that could really take your leadership to that next level?
That's a great question. And as we've seen today, the most effective leaders, they never stop growing, pushing boundaries, finding new ways to make a difference.
Couldn't have said it better myself. That's it for our deep dive, folks. We hope you found it insightful.
And inspiring.
And remember, you have the power to lead more effectively. It's within you. By applying these principles, you can unlock your full potential and achieve some truly remarkable things.
Until next time, keep diving deep.